Now we should be live. Hello. Hello and welcome to the ESG Fitness Podcast, live in the Commit Six group. Hopefully, unless I've gone live in the wrong group. I've not. I've
Nope,
gone live
you're
in the right group.
live in the group.
Well done to me. How are you, Andy?
I'm good, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm very well. I thought I was just about to get soaked, but it's held off. Got my steps in.
Yeah, I got soaked on the way home from work with the dog. So yeah, she's now raging with me.
Yesterday, like, I don't think I've ever been this wet. That sounds really weird, but I dropped my mum's car back at hers, and I was like, I'm just gonna walk home, and it was like pissing down, and she was like, I'll give you a lift, and I was like, it's fine, it looks like a passing shower. It was not a passing shower. So there you
No
go.
passing showers. This is
Okay.
not, this is Scotland.
I know. What I should have known. Right, so we've got a couple of interesting topics. Then we have some questions, and we also have some other questions from check-ins. So this morning, or maybe it was yesterday actually, but I read it this morning. Hannah sent me an article from The New Scientist, which was about brown fat. Well, actually, it was about CRISPR, which is a gene editing technology, I guess. But it was about editing your, well, certain parts of your genes so that you would produce more brown fat, or what they term beige fat, as opposed to white fat, which is like our normal white adipose tissue. Do you know what brown fat is?
I do, but you can tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't,
So,
I'm no expert, but
but
it's
you've been getting your geek on.
essentially mostly occurs in hibernating animals. So we have quite a lot of brown fat when we're young, and then we tend to have less and less of it. And brown fat is fat that produces heat, so it keeps us warmer. Now, we obviously don't need that because we have clothes and central heating, and we don't need to keep ourselves warm. But what it does do, because it's producing heat, is also burn energy. So people turn, like, it's called the fat that burns fat. Woohoo! So it's like it's kind of a passive way of increasing your basal metabolic rate. So you would burn more energy at rest doing nothing, which is an ideal situation if you're trying to lose body fat. So there's quite a lot of research, like obesity research, into trying to figure out how to increase people's amount of brown fat. The only really, like, in well, the only way that it's really been shown to increase brown fat at the moment is cold exposure. I found what looks like, on the surface at least, quite a cool study on green tea, and it showed an increase of 18% in brown adipose tissue after 12 weeks of drinking 2 cups of green tea compared to a placebo group, which it's quite interesting, but it kind of still makes me a bit dubious. And I think one of the problems with this is, I mean, 18% increase sounds like, yeah, that's like pretty significant, right, in comparison. And there was a control group. But, and the thing I was discussing with Hannah this morning is that we don't know the magnitude of that effect. So even if I said I can double the amount of brown fat you have, one, we don't really know how much you're starting with. And two, we don't know that that's going to be like 20 extra calories burnt a day, or if it's going to be 200 extra calories burnt a day, which may actually have an impact on your weight loss. But what was quite interesting about the study that Hannah found was that one, you don't need cold exposure, you also don't need green tea. It's editing part of your gene which produces a certain hormone, which would, I guess, code for producing more brown fat. And it looked like you were just on drugs there. Biting your
Mac
own
B.
lips. And it seemed to show that only, and I think it was done in mice, but it was, they only increased their body weight by half as much as the control group. So you're looking at half as much fat gain as the control group, which was quite interesting. And the reason I wanted to discuss this, it actually links into another question I had from a client this week, more about the gene editing side of it, which I find like ridiculous ridiculously interesting, and I also know barely anything about. Maybe I should get my mum on to discuss that because that's more actually what she does.
Good show.
Yeah, it would actually be quite interesting. Also hilarious. I think she'd probably say no. I might try and get my mum on the podcast. I don't know if I would be really nervous. I think I would
You
be.
probably would be.
It would
Yeah.
be really weird. I'm gonna do it. I'm
I think it's
doing it. She's
you
coming on the
don't know
podcast.
what they're going
Pardon?
You don't know what they're going to say. That's like that would be my for my dad. My dad's got like his language is work better than mine or worse than mine, depending. And it would be like,
I
what's coming?
can't see my mum coming on here and swearing a lot.
She might start telling some secrets about you, though.
Yeah, I'd be like, it's not live. This is not a live recording podcast. Anyway, it is really interesting. So basically, if no one knows what CRISPR is, it's an acronym, but it's also a way that you can edit genes, and there's quite a lot of ethical considerations about this. So there was a scientist, I think he's, well, I'm pretty sure he's been discredited now and like struck off the scientist list. But he is the first person to have like created gene edited babies or humans. And he, I think, or at least the idea behind it, and I don't know, I don't think we even know if it's worked because the study had to be stopped because it was an illegal study.
Yeah.
But the idea was that they were immune to HIV, which is
Yeah.
interesting. Yes. But I think just because of the potential that you could do with gene editing, it's like ethically not approved as yet.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's so much harm you could do, but there's also if it works, and there's so many issues with it working. Like, and especially as you can't, like, you can't, I don't think at the moment that it's, you really have the ability to know that, say, I wanted to change one gene that codes for something in my skin because I had a skin condition, that that would also have off-target effects in other genes around my body.
Yeah, that's it.
Which would obviously not be great. But yeah. So that's interesting. So the question that this kind of links to, it's a very vague link, is about gorillas. So one of my clients wanted to know basically what would happen if a gorilla started lifting weights. Like, because you know how gorillas are like really muscly?
I don't think they would need to lift weights.
Yeah, well,
They're
this is
genuinely,
kind of
they're
the.
genuinely beasts anyway. They're like absolute monsters. So they'll be able to, they'll what we probably use as like a maximum weight will be what they would use as a warm up.
Yeah, and but the reason behind this, because some people look at, I mean, I get asked this question every now and again, and it's either why are gorillas so muscly? Because they don't lift weights, and all they do is really walk around, or it's, well, gorillas don't eat protein, and look how much muscle they have, because they're so, and then it's like vegans being like. Why would you need to eat protein? Because gorillas don't, and they have loads of muscle.
Because you're not a gorilla, you fucking imbecile. Like, that's like saying, like, yeah, a gorilla could set a world deadlift record because they only need to lift it 3.5 centimeters because they've got long arms. Like, it has no relevance to what a fucking human can do. So, like, what's it's that?
Yeah.
But the gene editing thing's very interesting. As you say, the moral and ethical side of it could be like is going to be like it's just going to be chucking mud at walls. It's going to be really very. You just could. I don't think you could do it because, as you say, it's like similar thing like things like vaccinations and stuff. You know, vaccinations take years to study to find out if there are any negative effects for what they're trying to do. You know, you do the same with genes. You don't know if turning off, for instance, turning off a gene that maybe links to cancer, if it doesn't set up something else that your body can't handle. So yeah, it would be quite an. It'd be very interesting, but. It's a lot, that's it's very sci-fi, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't. Like it's used really frequently in scientific research. So you'd have like a you can create like a mouse that has a certain gene knocked out, and it's the same technology
Yeah.
that they're using to do that. but I guess you just don't do it in humans. And it's more, I think it's more to the point is that if then, like you, I don't know, you might have a certain, you might use Cripsa to, I don't know, change something about you. But then what would happen to your children and their children? And that'd be passed down. And that's quite scary as well. But anyway, the reason that
Yeah,
I
exactly.
felt like this kind of linked is one of the reasons that gorillas are so muscly is that their gene expression leads to less production of a protein that inhibits muscle growth, so myostatin. And one of the key targets at the moment for gene editing is this gene that codes for
How do
myostatin.
I stop that and happening? I
Yeah,
want all the
because
gains.
you would just be massive. Yeah. And so I thought that was interesting. And it's also why you see like Belgian blue cows and stuff and some. So, I mean, in some ways, like we are already using some of this technology, just not in humans. So,
I think it's, yeah, that's why.
and when it comes to the vegan argument, this is quite interesting. So I actually pulled up something Greg Knuckles has written on this. He was talking about bulls. So he says, for bulls, they get their protein from bacteria, one of their stomachs that ferments, in one of their stomachs that ferments cellulose. They swallow grass and bacteria. Wait, they swallow grass. Bacteria get to work on the grass and process. The bulls, regurgitate the grass, bacteria, and amino acids, swallow the mixture into the stomach that connects their digestive system, and digest some of the bacteria in the process. Most of the protein comes either from the amino acids the bacteria make or from directly digesting bacteria that breaks down cellulose. For gorillas, it's primarily a matter of volume. They eat roughly, get this, 18 kilograms of food per day.
That is the dream. That
Yeah,
is
so then when you
the
think,
absolute dream.
well, this is the argument. You know, when you see there's a meme that always goes around, it's like a steak is X amount of protein, but then it shows like broccoli is X amount of protein. It's like, yeah, but who's gonna eat like 10 kilograms of
Who's got
broccoli to get in enough protein?
exactly. Not only does broccoli taste like shit, one florette, I mean, imagine eating 10 kilograms, and also imagine the smell. You would be absolutely humming, like literally. People wouldn't want to be sit beside you, because I can't imagine gorillas smell like roses, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know, but anyway, so they eat mostly protein poor food and still wind up consuming a ton of protein. For example, if their diet consisted solely of fruit, which is incredibly protein poor, they'd still be eating around 200 grams of protein per day. Add in some leaves, bugs, and some meat, all of which are more protein rich than fruit, and a gorilla could easily consume 400 grams of protein per day. Yeah, not to mention that obviously human physiology is different than bull and gorilla physiology, but that kind of explains a little bit of why those things are different. I think coming back to the initial question, which was what would happen if a gorilla started lifting weights, I'm not sure that they would build that much more muscle.
Nah, they'd probably find that there'd be a certainly be a level of it'd be a little bit like a weight class of a sort of weightlifting athlete, somebody who does maybe powerlifting, because they're only having they're eating a certain amount of food, they would have to force that volume up even more to try and get the bit to get to build beyond that, and that would probably be even tough for them, even at 18 kilograms of food a day. Imagine having to up that to 25. That would be pretty tough. So,
Yeah, so I know that a lot of people have been asking about that gorilla question, and I hope that that clears it up a little bit.
it's a bit of a it's one of those that's that question that you do get of about the fact that oh yeah, but gorillas are vegetarian or vegan. You're sitting going, you just don't understand. You
It's
just you don't
called
get it.
context.
You don't get it. You just really don't get it. They're still getting in still this humongous amount of protein compared to somebody who isn't getting any protein in whatsoever.
Or
So yeah.
essentially, like creating their own protein via this bacterial fermentation process.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, ready for the next question?
Go, go, go.
Imperfect action makes sense, but if you're keeping perfect action for a few weeks, should you keep going as long as you can? Or is there a case for relaxing a little bit for the odd meal? I know something like having a pizza won't destroy me, but struggle not to think of it as a setback. Of course, this question might be my subconscious asking for permission to eat some cake.
I think everybody just needs to remember that, out with everything that's going on, we still have a life and you still have to enjoy life. So being miserable, the imperfect per excuse me, the imperfect action works nicely because it allows you to have that little bit more flexibility without feeling guilty about it. Whereas I know there's a lot of people have this thing where, there's lots of programs and lots of nutrition plans where it's like extremely strict. And as soon as you stray off it, the guilt levels are 9,000. So that imperfect action of, do you know what? I've just done everything. Everything I've done today has been great, but I had a bit of cake with him, a cup of tea. As long as that doesn't result in every single time you have a cup of tea, you're having a bit of cake. There's no reason why you can't factor that in. Even if it's not factored in within the calories that you've got yourself sorted for the day, but you just need to realize that it's not something that's going to become, it's not that big boulder in Indiana Jones gaining pace if you don't, you have to check it and say, right, I've had the bit of cake, perfect, done, back to what we're doing, rather than letting it snowball and just start to escalate, which I think where most people's binge eating starts to come in.
Yeah, it's feeling like you've failed when you haven't. You're just human. And the whole sort of idea behind imperfect action is that's what's realistic. Being perfect all the time is not realistic. And you can do it for a finite period of time. But I don't even want you, like, this whole question in my head is ro like where it's coming from is wrong. So it's not about, oh, if I do this, then from my perfect standpoint, I'm now imperfect. Like, imperfect action is just like, that's just real. That's what we are. We are, none of us are perfect. And it's just about doing the best with the situation that we can. Now, if you don't feel like you want to have a pizza or you quote unquote need a pizza, then don't have one. But also, it's not necessarily a win not having one. And actually, if you, like, for example, if you've just started Commit Six and you just stick to a meal plan, the perfect meal plan, your exact protein and calorie targets for the whole time, you miss out on social occasions and you don't eat food you enjoy and you eat food that you don't enjoy even when you're dieting, like most stupid thing, then I'm not impressed with that because it's not going to last. And I mean, it's great for our business, as in you'll probably leave for a couple of weeks, put the weight back on and come back. That isn't what we want, though. We want you to be able to maintain this. And also remember, like, this is so important to remember. Diet and exercise, doing Commit to Six, like any of this is meant to improve your life, not the opposite. And there's a sort of turning point there where people are like, oh yeah, I'm cutting back and I'm feeling better about myself and I feel accomplished every day. Great, 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 great. But at the point where you're sacrificing other areas of your life, now there will be compromises that need to take place. Like, instead of the three pieces of cake that you wanted, you had one. That's what I mean by compromise. Sacrifice is having none for 6 weeks and then thinking, I want to eat a whole cake every day for the next week. Oh, but I'll just go on the diet again tomorrow or next week or the next intake of Commit to Six. Like, this is what imperfect action is about. It's about being real. It's about maintaining your results and it's about finding balance. And we are far more impressed by balance than we are by over restriction.
Perfection is something to be fair, perfection is not something to be aiming at. When as soon as you aim for perfection, you've got something to fall down from. If something goes wrong, it's like Jenga. Take one wrong block out, the whole thing collapses. Whereas just looking at being slightly better every day, doing something slightly better each day, and adding that up to over the course of the 6 weeks is going to be much more beneficial for you as a person, and also much more beneficial to your life. You're not making like sweeping changes where you are sacrificing relationships. You know, you're not going out for dinner with your better half, or you know, you're not enjoying food with your kids, or whatever it is. You know, there's, you know, that's still, you know, life needs to be lived, and you know, that's, I think people seem to forget that. You know, yeah, if you're, you know, there's a difference between setting yourself up for like a photo shoot or a competition, then you're going to have to be nailed down and be as tight to it as you can be. But genuinely, just to get into bit, genuinely to get into better shape is just about just being better. Just stop, don't aim for perfection. That imperfect action is exactly what you need to do, is just being better, slightly better each day.
And especially if you're starting out, like this is kind of what's really exciting about people that are starting out and maybe thinking, oh no, I've got so much weight to lose, and oh, I only do 2,000 steps a day. How am I ever going to do 10,000 or even 12,000 target? Blah, blah, blah. You will make so much progress by the smallest changes. Like if you can get from doing 2,000 steps a day to 5,000 by the end of week one, you're going to start seeing changes already. If you can get from, you know, snacking every single night to not snacking every single night and making smart food choices, you're going to see huge benefits from what would be seen as like very small changes. And what often is the problem is that people think that they maybe see a bodybuilder and they're like, that's how I should eat, or that's what I should do. And it's absolutely not. Like sometimes even how restrictive they are, they're getting results despite that. Like it isn't even necessary. So don't look at someone and think I need to do what they're doing to get those results, because that isn't always the case. And actually, no one's giving you an award for making it any harder than it needs to be. And fat loss doesn't have to be that hard. Okay. Just one more thing on this, because I think maybe what she meant was like, should I have a pizza just so that I am following the imperfect action rules, like rules in inverted commas? And I would say no. Like you don't need to have something like a treat just to feel like you're having that, like you're following those principles. Do what you feel. And if it so happens that you're like ticking all the boxes again and again and again, that's great. Like it's more, imperfect action is more a mindset which has following actions. Okay. I've heard that you should, quote unquote, listen to your body, but struggle to know the difference between A, listening to my body and not working out, etc., because it's the right thing to do, and B, being lazy and not working out because I don't fancy it. I tend to err on the side of caution and don't stop until too late, causing myself injury slash illness. Any tips or guidelines? Okay, this is a really good question, and I honestly think the answer comes down to knowing yourself. So I'm exactly the same as you. I would err on the side of I'm probably more likely going to go to the gym when I shouldn't really go than I am when I'm not. But because I know myself quite well now, known myself for almost 29 years now, that means that I think I spoke to Sarah about this the other week actually. She loves training, barely ever misses a session. And the other week she was like, oh, I kind of had to force in my last session, didn't really feel like it, but I got in. It was a bit meh, but I got it done. Now, if you're someone who often misses workouts, I'm like, great, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want you to do. You ticked it off, you got it done. Not every session you're going to be motivated for. That's just life. But there are some people that are basically motivated for every session, or at least they want to go to the gym most days. If that's you, so Andy and I, if there's a day where I don't want to go to the gym, even if I've scheduled it in, I won't go, because it's so rare and because there's probably an underlying reason. Like, I am a little bit tired or ill, or I need another rest day. Or even, and sometimes you need a rest day mentally. Like, sometimes, like, oh, you know what? I've been to gym 6 times this week. I don't want to go again. I mean, I would say have a rest day anyway, but maybe I've been to the gym 5 times this week. Just don't feel like going again. And maybe your body's okay, but your mind needs a bit of a rest. If you're in that position, great, take a rest. If you're, if you've done two sessions and I really want you to get in at least three a week, and you're like, oh, I didn't really feel like going to the gym. Well, go to the gym anyway. Like, do it anyway. Just get it done. So I think knowing yourself is important. This client has suffered with like long COVID and like really struggling with energy levels post being ill. And if you're in that position, I would, yeah, definitely err on the side of caution. Is there, do you
No,
have
I
any
think it's, I
tips
think
that
that's,
differentiate that?
no, I think you've kind of nailed it on the head there with how you would go about sort of thinking about these things. I strangely enough, I had my first day off from the gym on Sunday for probably 7 weeks. And I've been doing double sessions and stuff as well. And I got to Sunday and was like, I just can't be fucking bollocked to train today. So so it's actually quite funny. So Saturday, kind of having that feeling of, I really should take a day off. I'm feeling pretty tired. Decided to smash a double scoop of pre-workout with a can of Monster. Had
Would not
what can
recommend.
only be, no, definitely not. Ended up lying on the floor, not eating dinner, having like probably the most emotional day, crying at some fucking pish on television. Like literally, it was like I'd literally fallen through a hole in the floor. I had no idea what was going on, but I just had a
That's what we
seriously.
feel like every month for a week.
Exactly, and I was just like, do you know what? Sunday came round, Laura, where was Laura? Laura was away out doing something, and I was like, right, I'm going to go to the gym, and I was like, do you know what? I'm just not going to go to the
You
gym.
know what?
I'm
I'm
going
not going to go to the gym because I'm going to have a pamper day. I'm going to get my nails done. I'm going to have a bath,
face
candles.
mask. All good. Nah,
Throw up
ended up going just to do.
self-care. I can really imagine you doing that.
I love a face mask. Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Me,
Although with
actually.
the
I don't
oh, do you
really
not
like
see with
it.
the facial hair, you kind of can only work from here upwards though. So
Yeah, I
you've kind
find
of
that.
decided the bit that probably needs it. So yeah, but no, definitely the biggest thing I can probably add to that about sort of knowing yourself is the differentiation between when you get to it. You know, there's been a few people already on the Commit to Six asking about, oh, I've got DOM, should I train through it or should I not train through it? You have to be able to differentiate between muscle ache, which is DOMS, and actual pain that is not good. And it's very, very obvious that which one's which. The DOMS is like very, DOMS can be, it's generally a full muscle thing. There's not really something that you're not going to find one precise area of your quad that feels it, unless you've been, like for instance, if you've been squatting in a slightly different movement pattern. But if you have something like, I've got my knee feels really painful, then maybe go, right, we'll ease off the knee a little bit. But try to understand that stuff as well. If you can start to understand that, I actually think you probably find that understanding your body and your levels of energy and stuff come better as well. So, yeah.
Listen to thy body. I'm glad you brought up DOMS actually, because if you are experiencing DOMS this week, if you don't know what DOMS is, it's just a fancy way of saying delayed onset muscle soreness. So soreness after exercise. This is totally normal and also a little bit inevitable when you start a new program. Now, some people are like, oh, I don't know how to organize my training week because I don't want to be sore, this sore all the time, and I've got other things on, and maybe I'm doing hockey or I'm going for a run, and it won't be this sore all the time. Like, this week will be pretty sore, next week will be a little bit sore, the week after probably won't have DOMS. So yeah. Right, do you have the questions?
I do. Okay, so I have seen women who are in a hypertrophy phase of their training eating around 3,000 calories per day, and they are gaining weight and looking fantastic. That seems like a lot to me, but they are managing to do it without gaining huge amounts of body fat. How does this work? Hannah has popped in a little answer, which Hannah's answers are generally absolutely top notch. And she says, I think it means one, they're incredibly active and have a high calorie expenditure, or two, they're lying. And I would
Or
probably err
three, they're
on
clen, they're on clen.
they're on clen, yes.
Yeah.
So The biggest thing with this is watching social media, is seeing these things about certain people smashing in 3,000 calories when they're sitting at 45 kilos body weight. There are some things that you have to realize with that. Social media is not real, and a lot of it isn't real. A lot of it is just bullshit that people put up so that they get likes and they get sort of likes on their pictures and to sell stuff. So when you see a 45 kilo shredded, generally female, sitting claiming that they're eating 4,500 calories a day, you kind of have to take it with a bit of a pinch of salt. She may have done that one day out of 6 months, but that's not something that she's going to be doing regularly. So unless she is literally running marathons daily, like, yeah, that would be the only way. Or,
just
as you say, the assistance.
Yeah. And also, that you can see the agenda as well. Because if I suddenly turned around and was like, yeah, I'm eating 3,000 calories every day, let me reverse diet you up to 3,000 calories every day. Great. I'd like that. Someone told me they could have me eating 3,000 calories and, like, yeah, gaining weight, but not much fat. Yeah. Hello. Take my money.
What's your bank details? We'll fire your cash over.
And the other thing is, you've got to look at, like, longevity of this. So if I started eating 3,000 calories a day now, I'd probably still look pretty good for about a month. And then it would be like, oh, okay, that is quite a lot of body fat actually that you're putting on. Right. So it could be that they've not done it for that long, and that's why it looks like they're not putting on that much body fat. It's like, oh, 2 days of eating 3,000 calories, not obese yet. Okay. Not surprising. It's like as much as weight loss takes time, weight gain also takes time as well. So I would look at those aspects, and I would also just, like, don't compare yourself to others, especially not if it's, like, in my head, I've got this typical personal trainer. She's probably, I mean, like, even if you use me as an example, I never ate 3,000 calories, but I think when I worked in London, I ate close to 2,000, but was shredded, like, disgustingly shredded. And
yeah,
I walked to, well, I didn't walk all the way to work, but I did about 30,000 steps a day. For some reason in London, you just do loads of steps, like, easily.
Yeah.
I trained twice. I also didn't have that many clients. So in between training sessions, I'd, like, I don't know, mess around in the gym. But basically, I was moving all day. And my expenditure was really high. That was the quote-unquote secret. Like, yeah, I was able to eat 2,000 calories and maintain a ridiculously shredded physique. And that's how you do it. That's how
you eat that much,
55 kilograms.
You can't compare yourself when you are potentially, you know, a sedentary office job, you know, compared to that. You know, comparing what you were on there to somebody who's a sedentary office job, 2,000 calories a day at the same body weight, they're going to batter on body fat a hell of a lot quicker than you did when you were having such a high expenditure. So having that comparison with any...
Sorry, I was going to say that, like, you'd think this was obvious, okay? But I remember seeing people, like, say, like a personal trainer like me being like, well, just... And I think the issue is you'd get this from your clients all the time. I remember having all the time this discussion. What do you eat in a day? And I'll just eat the same. And I was like, one way of gaining weight. Like, and I think it's just that mismatch of, like, okay, but I'm one completely different person. And two, like, your expenditure is like a third of mine, if that, even though you weigh more than I do. And if you ate what I ate every day, you wouldn't lose any weight. But I think people are just like, oh, that, and it does make some sense. I can see the logic behind it, but, oh, that's what I want to look like. I'll just do what they do. But they don't do what you do. They just eat the same.
And the problem is that nowadays social media is much easier to access to see people who are posting this kind of stuff. So you start thinking, oh, I should be doing that. I should be that. I should be like that. I am that body weight, you know. But you completely don't take into account everything else around it.
Do you know what is interesting though? And I will tell you who I'm talking about after. But there are certain people who are, like, small, right? I know them in real life. Small. So I think this individual weighs about 54 kilograms, a little bit shorter than I am, shredded, and eats like well, from her social media, it looks like she eats a lot and a lot of kind of like, I mean, I don't want to say junk, but like full on pizzas and
Yeah.
like every day. Which is, you're kind of like, oh, maybe she is mega active. But even then, I'm like, never seemed that like ridiculously active.
Yeah, that's it.
But then
So
you think, okay, well,
it's.
maybe, and I think this happens as well because it is attractive as a client to be like, if I was like, oh, I eat pizza every single day and ice cream every single night, let me kind of show you how to do that. Even if you're not outright saying that, that's the impression you're giving if you're saying that you can eat all this and stay in amazing shape. So sometimes I think that they just take pictures of it and then don't eat it or don't eat all of it.
Oh,
Or like,
100%,
let me just take a
100%.
photo of your food as well. Oh yeah, that is.
I'm out for dinner with somebody else, and we've got three dishes between us. But it makes it look like I'm going to eat all this myself, when in actual fact, I've taken a tiny wee bit off of that plate, a little bit off of that one, and then a little bit off of that one.
Yeah, and then,
Yeah,
oh, two
definitely.
bites later,
But
oh, I'm full.
exactly.
Okay, next
Cool.
question.
Right, next question. Does it matter if you mix up push and pull workouts within the same session, or does it always have to be separated?
There is a reason that they are separated, and that's for optimal recovery. So you've got your push-pull legs and full body workout, and that's it. That's why they're separated, so that, I don't know, say you did push one day and pull the other day, that the muscles that you were using predominantly in your push session are now recovering, adapting, and growing while you're doing your pull session. So ideally, like, these things are programmed a certain way with like an idea behind them. Like, there is a reason for all of this. So ideally, no, I wouldn't put those in the same session. If for some reason you wanted to do that, or you, like, I mean, no. Ideally, no.
Yeah, that's pretty much full body is
Yeah.
putting the push and pull session together. So
And there's
yeah,
nothing
split up
wrong
because
with the odd full body workout,
no, not
but
at all.
you probably won't recover as well. And if you're getting in like four workouts a week, they're all full body, then I would suggest that potentially breaking those up would give you better results.
Yeah, exactly. Next up, I'd like to know more about the treat mentality. I struggle with the whole fuck it attitude and do benefit from having a treat meal to look forward to at the end of the week.
Okay. Oh, this was the other thing I was going to say as you were talking about people who eat more calories. Like, it could just be that 3,000 calorie day is their quote unquote cheat day. Hashtag cheat
Yeah.
day. So the reason we
Hashtag
don't
cheat
like
meals.
cheat meals or even really like treats or like a treat day or anything per se is that it kind of creates this connotation of the fact that you're cheating. This is why I sort of pulled apart that imperfect action question as well, because it's like being imperfect isn't quote unquote cheating. It like the whole idea, the whole reason that I talk about it so much is because it isn't a negative. Imperfect is not a negative, it's a fact. Like, that's what we all are, and that's how we should be dieting, that's how we should be living. And also, there isn't a perfect diet. Like, there's so many factors that come into it that there just isn't. So you absolutely can have a quote unquote treat to look forward to every week, but we want you to account for it. So that just means, okay, on a Sunday, I do like a treat. I like to have a roast dinner with my family, and I like to have a glass of wine, and I like to have a bit of chocolate after dinner. Okay, if that's what you like and that's your indulgence, this is what I would say as well, like, choose your indulgences and enjoy them. Don't have it for the sake of it, but if that's your thing and you love it and you don't want to take it out, great. I want you to keep it in. But account for it. So you know it's going to be roughly, don't know, 700 calories. Okay, so every day you're going to take away 125 calories during the week or something. Like, allocate it so that you've got enough calories extra for that day. It's not that hard to do. The other thing is, I sometimes find, I don't know if you're the same, but if my like quote unquote treat was totally calorie calculated and I knew exactly how much it was, and if I had one bite more it's gone over, and if I have one bite less I've not met my calories, blah blah blah, I don't enjoy it as much. So what I would tend to do is if I'm like, okay, well, on Sunday I like to go for brunch. I know it's roughly 500 calories. I'm gonna account for that, but I'm not gonna, like, if it's a little bit
You're not
over,
going to be
it doesn't matter. If it's
eating
a
a
little
little
bit
bit.
under, it doesn't matter because it happens once a week or twice a week. Now, if you're someone who's like eating out every single day, then you do need to be a bit more savvy with accounting for those calories because they will quickly add up. But yeah, if it's once a week, estimate it, enjoy it. Like, that's the main thing, enjoy it.
But that's it's kind of comes back to the question that we had about the whole restriction. The whole idea of a diet. I think the perfect diet is, this is an Alan Aragon quote, the perfect diet is the diet that you can stick to and maintain and adhere to long term.
Alan Aragon.
Like, yeah.
Not
He's
meant
making a
to
comeback though.
talk about
He's
him
making a
anymore.
comeback. I know, but he's making a comeback.
I don't
But
know how
yeah,
I
I think
feel. I don't know how I feel about it. I just don't know. Because the thing is, the information is still very good.
Yeah, you kind of. It's a difficult one, isn't it? You kind of got to pull them apart and use one part and then totally negate the
So
other
for
part.
probably
But they can't.
99% of people listening that don't know, Alan Aragon is a researcher, I guess. He used to have this review. I don't know if he still has it, the Alan Aragon review. But anyway, it's really, really good. I think I had a subscription for a while. And then a quite a big scandal came out with some sexual offences and inappropriateness. But it is interesting that, like, why do we put him on a pedestal? Like, why? Because he gives out good nutrition information. Did we think he would be a good person?
Yeah, I think
But I
that's the
think we
thing
do
though,
that with
isn't
a
it?
lot of people, don't we?
Oh, 100%. Like, look at the, within the industry that we're in, we kind of see a bit more into the depths of,
Nothing we
the
can
fitness
mention
industry.
now.
But we see a bit more into the depths of the fitness industry, and we understand, we can see how much shit there is out there. And how much crap that goes on in the background that people who aren't part of the fitness industry but are looking out in from the outside don't see. It's the same thing as, like people like fucking Kardashians giving out dietary advice. Like, why are you listening to that shite? It's exactly the same thing,
I think about this
disassociate,
quite
like.
a lot. Like, I cannot understand for the life of me. Like, first of all, if you take way a step back, someone having the ability to sing is so random that we put them on like this massive pedestal. Oh, you can make a really cool noise with your throat, like with your voice box, whatever. Oh, well then, in that case, like, let's all celebrate you like ridiculously. And then also idolize everything that you say, like even like actors and stuff. I'm like, that's amazing that you know that acting is an amazing skill, singing is an amazing skill. Do I want like your knowledge on climate change? Almost definitely not. No. And I guess it's like,
Know your
if
name.
but then on the flip side of that, I'm like, okay, but actually in life we do like put celebrities on this pedestal, and actually they have a huge platform. And if they can use that platform for good, then I'm all for
You
that. So I can't, like, I'm kind of backtracking there,
look at
but it
what.
is strange that we do that in like society. It's like, oh, you're good at kicking a bag full of air. Oh, let's hear what you have to say on really important issues in the world.
Well, I suppose you kind of, as you said exactly that there, you kind of have to, at times, you look at, like, for instance, Marcus Rashford and sort of feeding children, underprivileged children. Yes, the lad makes 150 grand a week. That's not, he makes 150 grand a week playing football, but he works for that 150 grand a week. The club can afford to pay him that 150 grand a week, but he's now putting his money to good use and helping funding these things. And I think certainly a lot of the time, I think I'm a bit biased towards football because obviously that was what my that's my background. But I think
Footballers are the
everybody seems to
worst.
think, well, actually, I would say that there's a lot of footballers out there that try to get away with a lot of dodgy stuff. But I think there are a lot of footballers out there who get bypassed about the good that they actually do and what they actually bring to society. So, you know, there's a guy that plays for Man United called Juan Mata. He started something called the 1% Club, which is 1% of your weekly salary goes to children's charities. And people go, 1%? What's 1%? Well, 1% of 150 grand a week is 1% more than they were getting previously. You know, so,
Yeah,
you
and I
know, this
guess
it's nothing
like
to do with that.
you can always argue, why not 2%? Why not 3%? Why not 5%? Come on. Like, and also
Yeah.
because of how you can give to charity, it's probably tax free and blah blah blah. But equally, if you could
Yeah, well,
get every footballer to be like, yeah, I'll give 1%, then you're gonna make a hell of a lot
well,
more
that's
than
it.
if you could only get half of them to give, well, maybe not
Yeah,
half, but
it's
like,
the same
a
thing
couple
as
of them
when
to give five.
you know, I'm a massive, I've always been a massive David Beckham fan. Like, I think he's a very good role model for professional athletes and how he handled himself on the pitch and as an athlete, how he trained, etc. You know, and he got absolutely derided when he decided to give up his wages to two French orphanages when he signed for Paris Saint-Germain. So he signed for 6 months, made £7 million for the 6 months, £1 million a month, and he gave it all to split it between two Parisian orphanages. And everybody's going, "Oh, it's just a charity. It's just a publicity stunt." Yeah, but it's a publicity stunt that two orphanages now have £3.5 million each. Who gives a shit
Yeah,
if it's some promoting him?
I kind of thought that when McDonald's stepped forward and were like, "Oh, we'll give out all these like free meals,"
Yeah.
because it is a publicity stunt. And actually, let's be real, like you might get the free meal, but then like someone else is going to buy something while they're there, and like they probably made more money from it, whatever. But equally, I don't care. Like, yeah,
Yeah,
okay. So
that's it.
in some ways, I'm like, cool. That means that McDonald's is getting something from it, and also so are people that need some food. It's like a
Yeah.
win-win situation. Great.
Course. Yeah,
But there's
exactly.
always like I think giving, you're like you get something from giving, even if it's just a nice feeling.
It's the same. Do you remember? Did you ever watch Friends? I know you don't have television, and I don't know you don't watch TV and
I
stuff.
have
But did you ever
seen
watch Friends?
Friends. I
Have you ever
have
seen
heard
the
of it.
episode where? Have you ever seen the episode where Phoebe's trying to do a selfless task where she gets nothing in return, and she just can't do a task without getting something back? It's exactly that. You know, you'll always be. You know, there's very few times where you give something and you don't get something back in return, and it's just
I
it's. I
actually
think.
tweeted about this week because I saw like one of my friends had shared this tweet and I was like, I could not agree less with this tweet. And it was something like, I'm
Oh
just,
wow!
yeah, I know. Not like me,
It's
not to
unlike you. So I'm sorry.
not to agree with something.
Disagree, God damn it!
But it was someone had written, would they do it for me? Is what I ask myself before I do any favors. I hate
Oh,
that.
that's bullshit.
That is the
That's
worst
bullshit.
thing. And it was like retweeting everything. So I said, giving with the expectation of receiving something back is not giving, it's a transaction. Transaction? It's a transaction.
It's like all these fucking idiots that put up, "Oh, my good deed for the day," and then tell you about your good deed for the day. Well, it's not a
Or
good deed
like they're
anymore. You're
like,
using it for
hey
selfless.
guys, look at me just giving money to homeless people.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Okay, do
Bollocks.
we have any more questions? Because we've
We've
rambled.
got a couple. Let's rattle through them. Same person. As a near enough beginner, is it better to do less reps but keep good form? Thinking about specifically about incline push-ups from the home workout. I could do 20 badly, but only one well. As I saw, I had a few options to do less, do them badly, or swap. What should I do in the future? There's always regressions when it comes to exercises. There's always ways that you can take the level down slightly. And say, for instance, if you're doing 20 push-ups, you do five on your toes, then you revert to doing 15 on your knees, and then building it up. So the next time you do seven on your toes, 13 on your knees, and working it that way. So use the little, if you need any help with things like little regressions or progressions, ping things up in the group and I'll get onto them with the technique stuff, because we've done a few videos already with stuff like push-ups, where we can give you a hand with that. So jam it up in the group just so it gives me a reminder, and then I can start putting these things back in again.
Yep, nothing to add. That's perfect.
Yeah. Plant-based proteins. I don't eat meat or dairy, so my protein servings aren't always from complete protein sources. I eat eggs some days, use soy milk and add soybeans to meals, but the rest of my protein is made up from other things like beans, lentils, etc. Is this mix and match approach adequate, or would it be beneficial to try and get my 100 grams a day from complete sources? I don't know if complete sources is the right term, but I'm sure you know what I mean.
Complete sources is the right term. Well done.
Yeah,
and by that, we mean a complete amino acid spectrum of the essential amino acids, which you can get from like different plant-based proteins. So if you just have like more of a variety, so you get some protein from peas, but also some from soy and some from like, so there's other things like tofu is a complete protein, which is an animal. Quinoa, however the hell you want to say it, complete protein.
Quinoa for the portions.
Quinoa. Yeah, so there's loads of ways you can do it. I wouldn't worry like too much. I like that you sometimes have eggs and that you... What was the other thing? No, it was just...
Eggs. But mainly eggs, soy.
Yeah.
And some soybeans to meals, etc.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you're doing really well. I wouldn't overly stress about it. One thing you can do, and it's the only time I ever suggest taking branched-chain amino acids, is just to like take them with meals so that you know that you're getting a good leucine dose, so that you know that you're maximally stimulating muscle protein synthesis via leucine. So
mic drop.
So you could do that, but apart from that, like, and getting a variety of proteins in, with like a variety of plant-based proteins in, so that you are via doing that creating a more complete protein, that would be my top tips.
Nice. The next one's kind of been covered. Training when run down seems to be the time for seasonal colds and flu. I won't mention the COVID word. And I've also been knocked back by one this past week. Interested in your views on best approach to training when you feel far from 100%. Is it suck it up and get it done, or listen to your body?
Honestly, listen to your body. Yeah, if you're ill, don't train. Listen to your body. The other thing is, as much as you might think, oh, just power through it, probably won't make it worse, it will probably make your illness prolonged. Now, best case scenario, it's going to be a couple more days of feeling crap. Worst case scenario, like, these things can get really serious, especially I've seen with COVID and long COVID, that it can turn into like quite a serious long-term chronic fatigue type situation, which you obviously don't want to get into, where if you'd actually just said, okay, for a week, I'm just going to take it easy, I'm going to get my steps in, I'm going to stick to my nutrition, and I'll get back to training the next week. I would rather you had an extra day and missed, you know, a couple of sessions more, than you go back to the gym early and make yourself worse. The other thing is, at the moment, you have really like a duty of care to others as well, that you shouldn't be spreading illnesses, especially at the moment. So if you're not feeling well, you shouldn't be out and about anyway, especially not obviously if you have symptoms.
I'd say that's a general rule of thumb anyway, if you go to the gym, etc. Even prior to COVID, if COVID was never here, you should still never be going into a gym feeling ill, because you're going to pass that on to somebody else. And
you don't know what... I think this has really heightened things like that. Like, you don't know that there's someone going through chemo who's also wanting to go and use the gym.
Yep.
Or a variety of other
autoimmune
things,
et cetera. Yeah. We've got two questions, both pretty quick. Wondering about why the workouts changed every 2 weeks. I normally hear you need to do the routine for 6 to 8 weeks to see the results. I'm happy to try different workouts, but I also usually like to try increasing my weights, rep sets each week. So I hope the same exercises will feature, just maybe in a different format.
Okay. This is, it's honestly quite a tricky situation for coaches, because some people... For example, someone uncommitted has just been like, I want them to change more often. I'm not going to change them more often. So once you get onto the committed program, they tend to change every 4 weeks. That's because you are more experienced now. And actually, this question has completely nailed it. Like, your body will not get bored of the workouts. Your body will still be adapting to the workouts. You could do the same workouts probably for about a year, as long as you're pushing yourself, and you would still get benefits from them. What tends to happen is you get mentally bored. So that's why they change more frequently, because we want you to keep you mentally stimulated. Now, exactly what you've said is going to happen. Like the key lifts don't really change in programs. Like the key lifts will still be there. Otherwise, it's just a poor program. So you'll still have your
Yeah.
key lifts. What will change is the rep ranges, some of the assistance exercises, just to keep you engaged and excited. And it's like, oh, I've got a new workout. That's exciting. But yeah, like ideally, I would have you stick to the same workouts for a longer period of time. If that's you, I'm more than happy for you to stick to week one workouts or the first 2 weeks workouts for the 6 weeks. You will see amazing benefits doing that. If you're someone who likes to see the numbers progress and you want to stick to the same workouts because you know what you're doing and you really want to push those numbers up in those rep ranges and that's how you see progress, it sounds like you're probably a bit more of an experienced lifter as well. Stick to the same workouts for the 6 weeks.
Cool. Last one, tracking. How worried should you be about tracking whilst eating out? I've cut down the amount I eat out and try to pick places where the menu calories are online, but as I can only meet people outside often, you just need to go where you can get an outside table with a heater. So I'm guessing that there's somewhere there's no online menu. Obviously, it's a case of doing your best and assuming that MyFitnessPal will underestimate the calories because restaurants use more butter, oils, etc., and you can't wait and you can weigh, but trying to find the balance between seeing people and being worried about tracking is quite hard. This one is, again, from my side, is a bit more about priorities. If you're going out regularly, but you have said that you've cut down the amount of time that you're going out, you have to be smarter about what you're doing. Things like looking, choosing things like if you're going out 3 or 4 times a week, you're going to have to maybe rein it back a bit more. And then there's no reason why you can't go out and socialize with people without eating. That's also an option. But yeah, the thing with MyFitnessPal is MyFitnessPal will. I would always overestimate rather than underestimate because you just don't know what's going to be in the food. You don't know if the steak's being drenched in butter because I know a lot of restaurants do the whole butter on the steak to sort of give it a taste at the end. So yeah, I would overestimate rather than underestimate.
Yeah, I agree. Always overestimate on meals out. Even if you're at Nando's and you know what the calories are meant to be, add 10%, because they're always going to make it like they want the portion sizes to be bigger. It's the in their best interest for it to look like you're not eating many calories on the menu, and then give you more because it's tastier and you'll come back. And you don't know if it's like the first chicken breast that went on straight after the oil, or the chicken breast that went on the fifth time and there isn't as much oil on it. All these things. So when you are losing weight, try and overestimate if weight loss is the goal. But again, it's a bit about like imperfect action and depends how many times you're going out. I know that's harder at the moment because you can only go out, but there's always a decent option on the menu. You can do things like ask for salad dressing on the side. You can ask for sauce on the side. You can ask, for things not to be cooked in oil, maybe. So there are
You can
decent.
pretty much do all of that nowadays, to be fair. Like, Laura has, she's got lactose intolerance, and restaurants are generally very smart. Like, she went out for breakfast and asked for scrambled eggs without milk. And generally, but I think years gone by, they'd been like, well, you can't have scrambled eggs in. Whereas nowadays, they're finding ways around it because there's so many more people that are looking after themselves, watching what they're eating. Obviously, more people with different kind of intolerances and stuff. So restaurants have to be more flexible.
Yeah, and even think about portion sizes, like they tend to be quite large at restaurants. And remember that, I mean, this is a reminder to myself as well, but remember that you don't have to finish the portion. I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. But you don't have to eat these massive restaurant portions. So that would be something to think about as well. And like generally, if you're, I don't know, say you're going out like twice a week. I'm like, go out and enjoy it and pick something that you like and try and account for those calories. Estimate them, overestimate them a bit, and account for it. If you are going out like most days for a meal, you're gonna have to be a bit stricter and you're gonna have to look at the menu and be like, I think I'm gonna have to choose like what might be quite boring option, or like something that's less calories. And maybe you really wanted the steak with chips, but instead you're going to have the steak with a side salad. Like those are the kind of options you're now going to have to make.
It's compromise.
Compromise. Okay, wow, we've
Exactly.
been chatting for an hour. Should we let people go?
Wow. Yeah.
Thanks for listening, team.
Ciao, ciao.